Have you guys ever tried explaining football to a little kid? It's almost impossible to make it make sense. I've got two kids myself, and they're always like, Dad, what's this thing on TV for your work? When can we watch some Paw Patrol? Well, meet Future Fans, an innovative brand that helps little kids become big fans by embedding the rules of football into parallel games and activities. The way they teach is super unique and effective. As an example, they have this beanbag toss game with four tries to teach downs in football. I tried it with my kids. They love it. And later they connect those games back to the sport itself through a storybook. Seriously, check out the reviews on this thing. They have 4.9 stars on Amazon. Imagine your kid asking to watch on Sundays with you or being right there alongside you for all the ups and downs with your favorite team. That's what dreams are made of right there. And Future Fans exists to make that a reality. If you want your kid to understand football, Future Fans is for you. And it's only $49.99 right now. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com to get 10% off and unlock a lifetime of memories starting now. That's $49.99. Use the code MMQB at futurefans.com.
At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello and welcome to the MMQB NFL podcast. I'm Connor Orr. Albert Breer's here. We're back from Indianapolis. Albert stayed a little bit longer than me. He likes the shrimp cocktail out there. I went home a little bit early. We're back. The greatest football convention circus sideshow of the year is complete. And we still don't know what the Bears are doing, which is kind of fun. And so we're going to get into that. But I do think it's appropriate to lead off the show with two things that, you know, we didn't tape last week because we're out at the combine. And for anybody who's been there and for you guys at home, like, you're just working the whole time. And I say working in air quotes, but working because you're trying to bump into people. You're trying to learn things. And it's really hard to set a schedule because it's like, oh, okay, I'll tape this time. But, oh, but I ran into this guy and then I ran into this guy. And so
Hard to take yourself off the grid.
It's hard to take yourself off the grid. Yeah. So I think it's good that we just come back. We're going to have a nice little wrap up here. But two things to start off with. One, obviously, this morning, we got the news of Chris Mortensen's passing, and I mean, just what a loss for the football community. You know that you're one of the great ones when everybody stops and can acknowledge unanimously the gifts that you've given to the community at large. And, you know, it's crazy because, you know, I'm not going to make this about anybody, but I will say that when I was young, like covering a team, and I'm 22, 23 years old, you know, and I'm banging out notebooks and you're not even dreaming about doing something where, you know, you're going to be able to be on TV or be at Sports Illustrated or whatever. Mort would read everything and he used to credit me on air for like all this Jets minutia, and I just remember how much that meant to me at the time. My family saw it and just how special that was to them. And I mean, obviously everything that he went through with his health, he was just this picture of determination and gratitude and faith. And so yeah, the football world is going to miss him, and the world at large. I mean, just what a giant of a human being, you know?
Yeah, and this is going to ring true of both people we're about to talk about, Connor. But, you know, it's just, to me, it's like how unanimous it seems to be. Like, when everybody's saying the same thing about you, then, like, you're really, you know, you've done something, you know? And everybody says the exact same thing about Mort. And, you know, my stories with him are similar to yours. You know, I can remember you know, at the start, covering the lockout in 2011, I was still relatively new, just a few months at NFL Network. And, you know, I was covering this story where the football world stopped, and a lot of people stopped working, too, to be honest. And I was thrust into this position where I was going to be the guy covering my bosses, you know, and I was going to be covering a very tangled and difficult story. And yeah, and I was out in front of it. And, you know, I could feel the resentment from some older reporters, you know, like, what does this kid know? What are they doing throwing this kid into this story? And you know, it's tough to have confidence in a situation like that. And, you know, I can just remember, I didn't know Mort very well at that point. Now I got to know him later. I got to know him pretty well over the years, but at that point I didn't know him very well. And he would just send me these notes. And I tweeted one of the DMs yesterday that gave me so much confidence that I was on the right track. And I was competing with Mort at that point, because Mort was one of the people who was actively on it and actively covering it, you know, and he wasn't one of these people that was seeing the lockout as license to take a 5-month vacation, because there were those people out there.
Yeah.
And you know, it meant so much to me that, like, Chris Mortensen was reaching out to me and was telling me what a good job I was doing and was telling me that I had a bright future. It was just incredible to get those notes from him. And here's the other thing. Like, one thing I've talked to other people about this over the last day, and you know, it's weird, but he's one of these guys who, you know, it's one thing to say something nice. It's another thing to say something nice when somebody really needs it. And he seemed to always say something nice when you needed it. You know what I mean? Like, and I don't know. It's hard to say whether that was a coincidence, you know, but it didn't seem to me like, you know, it seemed like he kind of knew when people needed him, you know, and
yeah.
That's a really special trait. I can't put my finger on how he knows it. Maybe it's just that he knows the business so well that he has an understanding of what other people are going through in the moment. But like, it always seemed like he would reach out when you needed it. And that meant a lot to me. And that's who he was personally. Professionally, I think there are very few people over our lives that have made a bigger impact than Mort had. And I just think of, like, you know, when I, when I was at NFL Network and I was learning TV, I remember one of the producers there said to me, your goal is, like, when somebody has the TV on in the background, when they see your face, to turn the volume up, mm-hmm. right? And I think Mort was probably the ultimate example of that, right? Like, when you were growing up, when I was a teenager, you know, and I'd have, ESPN on a pregame show, whatever, if it was on in the background and Mort came on the screen, it was like, you know, he was saying something valuable, so you wanted to turn the TV up, you know? Yeah. And so I think to me, it's just somebody who, you know, what he said always seemed to be important. And, just a trailblazer in our business, you know, up there with the guys like Will McDonough, who, you know, opened the door for a lot of people like me who, I've done a lot of TV work coming from the print world. So, he'll be missed. And, again, it sounds cliche, but I guess better person than better pro, you know what I mean? Like, it really applies in this case, and he's not the only one, obviously.
For sure. And, yeah. You know, our former boss, our longtime mentor, Peter King, also retired today, mm-hmm. Retired last week
when, yeah.
Right before we were going to the combine. And so, you know, I think the broader sentiment here, and I think the thing that both of them, you know, I talk to Peter regularly, and I think mm-hmm. the one takeaway, if you were trying to come up with something that we should be thinking about today, is that this is about football writing in general, is about doing the work, right? It's about mm-hmm. Not parading yourself around, making yourself out to be something. It's not playing fast and loose. And Peter and Mort, you know, these guys were at the epicenter of information. It wasn't, I kind of heard this from one guy and this guy said this from the other thing. It's like, no, you know, Peter was famous for, you know, driving to work with head coaches, you know, being in the draft room mm-hmm. of teams. It's not that he's not guessing. He saw it. He knows exactly what was going on. And I do know that, you know, Peter is not, it's concerned as much as we all are about mm-hmm. what this is going to look like in 10 years, 15 years. The NFL,
yep.
I would say like 80% of people who cover the NFL cash a paycheck from either the NFL or a network that is concerned about their NFL television rights. And so where do we go from here? And I think that Peter and Mort, they're the guiding lights, right? It's like, this is the kind of thing that we have to keep in mind moving forward. It's like, it's about the information. It's about telling the truth. It's about going deeper. It's about making extra phone calls. And so, I don't know. I think that's kind of what I'm thinking about today.
I mean, like with Peter, it's like, it's a little different than Mort. Obviously, I think we're all sad on Mort. With Peter, I'm like sort of happy for him, like that he gets to go out on his own terms.
And yeah.
He's gonna get the chance because he's such a great family man and cares so much about Anne and the girls and his grandkids. Like, he'll get the chance to dive into all of that, because I think any of us who have worked with him, Connor, I think this will resonate with you. He's so into like the stories that he's following and the stuff that he's doing, that as much as he can say, he says, I don't know how much longer I'm going to do this. So it's like, dude, I can't see like training camp starting without you like in some rental car driving across the Midwest.
Right.
You know, so I'm happy for him that he's getting the chance to go out on his own terms and he's at peace with it first and foremost, because both you and I are close with him. You know, I was at an event with Kalen, and Kalen Kaler did a great job of picking up the baton for Peter and having this event in Indiana that's always been designed. It was designed by Peter to benefit local charities. And so Kalen had the mic and she asked everybody to go around the room and tell the crowd what our favorite story that Peter did was. And I brought up a story that I read when I was in high school that he did with the Packers. And Peter was famous. Like, Peter and Edwarda were the two like Brett Favre guys, right? And so Peter had like incredible access this one game week to the Packers. And whoever's out there, you can go up and look it up. I'm sure it's in the SI vault. You know, I'm sure it wouldn't be that hard to find. But he was basically embedded with the Packers for an entire week. And reading that story, I remember it was one of those, like, I could really see myself wanting to do this for a living. And, you know, I was a teenager. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I knew I loved sports, but I knew I wanted to do something in sports, but I wasn't sure what. And that story really resonated with me. Well, fast forward to, you know, after the Super Bowl, you know, I watched Peter go into, you know, at the end of the game and the locker room's closing up and we'd all kind of gotten all the stuff we were going to get. And, you know, I was trying to get Andy, and, you know, I'd sort of arranged a couple things before the game. I was trying to get Andy Reid after the game, like I had the year before. And, you know, I watched Peter walk into Andy Reid's office, and this is all going to come together. I know this is a little long winded, Connor, so thank you for being patient, but I watched Peter walk into Andy Reid's office and at the stadium. And it was, you could tell Andy was trying to take care of Peter in the moment. And it hit me like, I'm going to back off. I'm going to let these two have this. You know what I mean? Like, and yeah. you know how maniacal I can be, but I just watched it and I was like, I don't want to push this. And, you know, like, I didn't even know why I thought that in the moment, but like afterwards I sort of realized what it was like, I had, you know, whenever like young journalists, young aspiring sports reporters ask me for advice, I say like, treat all your relationships like 30-year relationships, right? Like, treat all of them like these people are you're going to be working with them in 30 years. And that'll be a good compass for doing right by people, being empathetic towards people, and telling stories the right way. And so, it hit me that that's exactly what I was talking about. Cause you know who the tight ends coach in that Packers team was in the 90s?
Andy Reid.
It was Andy Reid. And that story is where that relationship started. So it was such like a full circle moment for me, like watching that, you know what I mean? Like watching him go in the office with Andy. And I just think about like, that's Peter, is his relationships. You know what I mean? That's Peter's, like, he's got people's trust. And that's Peter. He's going to go get the best story. And he's not going to get the best story because it says Sports Illustrated on his credential. He's going to get the best story because of who he is.
Right.
Because that guy who's taking him behind the curtain knows that Peter's not going to screw him.
Right.
Because he knows who Peter is. And so, like, to me, like, that, like, I think, was the best way I could encapsulate it, because it was like, I could remember that story I read back in the 90s And here is Peter really, like, I mean, effectively on the final night of his career, harvesting a relationship that was built 25 years earlier, you know?
It's true. Yeah.
I just think it's a great, there's a great lesson for all of us, even us. And I'm not even talking about kids just getting in journalism, you know, now and getting out of college at 22, 23 years old. I mean, it's a good one for all of us to remember.
It's not about what someone can do for you. It's connecting on a human front. And, you know, you do that long enough and you take care of people long enough. And sure, it pays off. But, you know, more importantly, it's, you know, it's how we should live our lives. You know what I mean? Like, it's not like, you know, I'm not going to try to hunt this person down because he can do something for me. It's, you know, I'm going to approach it with some curiosity, some humility. And and then you kind of go forward from there. If it benefits you, great. If it doesn't, you know, it is what it is, you know?
Yeah. And again, like, I don't think it's like a coincidence that, like, these people who had a great, like, these people who are older in our business and Mort and Peter, who had a great personal connection with so many of us and took care of so many of us, were also able to build strong relationships, you know, on the other side of it with the people that we cover. That's, you know, obviously there's a correlation there.
Yeah. Well, all the, you know, if you guys are listening to this, give yourself some time, check out Peter in the archives. It's just a really fun way to see where football journalism, the genesis of what we do today, where it started. I mean, we all owe everything to him. And also just, you know, with Mort, you know, check out the stories. I mean, Albert tweeted the DM. There was a couple people after you did it, I think, that ended up sharing some messages from Mort and just the nicest things, you know.
I thought Tom Pelissero's was amazing.
Yeah.
Like, do you see that one?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
I mean, that was, you guys can look that one up. That was pretty incredible. I can't do it justice by telling the story here, but just an incredible act of kindness. Like, there are a lot of good ones out there.
Yeah. So let's get into what we, let's get into the combine. There's no easy way to transition to that, but thank you to both of those guys. I mean, my goodness. I mean, we wouldn't be here doing this, being able to talk about the combine if it wasn't for them. I want to know what you think of the Bears, but first, did you see that I got dunked on at the combine? Did you see this?
Yeah, that was excellent. The Jason Light thing.
It was wild.
Well, just to give people background on that too, like, I don't think I'm speaking out of school here to say that Jason has been poking at me and I've been passing some of those things along to Connor over the last couple months.
So way back. Okay. In July every year, I pick all 272 games. Yeah. I picked the Buccaneers to win two. My thought process at the time, which I have come out and said I was wrong about, is okay, new OC who hasn't called plays before. You're wondering, you know, we got a QB battle between Baker Mayfield and Kyle Trask, which at the time, Baker wasn't really coming out and winning. And then, okay, you got Mike Evans on the wrong side of 30. You got Chris Godwin. These guys are probably going to try to butt their way out of town by the middle of the season. You know, this has a recipe for a little bit of a teardown. And if you're Jason Light, maybe that's what you want. You climb up and you get Caleb Williams and you reset. Anyway. We're at the combine, and so Jason's doing his press conference. I go over and I tap the Buccaneers director of PR on the shoulder, and I was like, hey, can I just talk to Jason for a minute? I have a quick question for him. He says, yeah, sure. Sometimes you do that at the combine because you don't have a question, you know, you want to shout in front of a million people, you have something you're working on longer term, and I did. And so Jason comes over and he's like, and then all of a sudden, like, you could feel the mood shift a little bit, and he was, and then someone goes, "Do you guys have a history?" And
did
then,
you have a feeling? Did you have it in the back of your head it was going to happen?
No, I didn't even remember that I picked the Bucs to win two games, and so he comes up to me.
I did send you a couple things. I'm pretty sure, right?
I don't think you did.
I think I'm pretty sure I did.
I don't know. We're gonna have to go. We're gonna have to go check the tape on this.
We might have to do a dive into the text messages.
We might have to go do a dive into the text messages. I don't remember that at all.
I'm pretty sure it might have been a while ago, but I'm pretty sure at one point or another I may have alerted you to something going on here.
So I think like I'm having an off the record conversation with the GM, and then someone says, "Oh, do you guys have a history?" And then he looks over and then he looks at me and he goes, "Well, we won a lot more games than this guy said we were going to win." And then in my mind, I'm like, oh, man, he wants to talk about this. Okay. And again, I didn't know he was upset. And in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, ah, God, did I pick him to win two or three? How bad is it? And he's like, yeah, you picked us to win two games. And, you know, we won, and he's like, so next year, can you at least pick us to win like eight? Because if you're eight off again next year, that means we went 15-1 or 16-1. And so
he's probably been holding on to that one for a little bit.
It was great. And so, yeah. and then he was super nice, took all my questions afterwards. But then 5 days later,
I thought you guys both handled that really well, by the way. Did you know the camera was there?
I didn't know any. So that's the best part. I have no idea this is being filmed. Like whoever had a camera out, it was not visible to me.
So this is like incognito. This is like a covert operation.
It's kind of like secretly filmed. Which is fine. And so I, 4 or 5 days later, whatever it was, I'm on a run with my buddy, my neighbor, and you know, the text messages come to my Garmin watch and I just get a text from, one of my buddies, that's another reporter. And he's like, oh my God, I can't believe the Bucks did that. And I was like, what? And then I get another text. Can you believe that? You get another text. Well, you handled it really well. Another text. I can't believe he actually read your predictions. Another. And then my run is my time of day to clear my head. But I said to my buddy, I was like, dude, we got to stop at like this stoplight. I got to figure out what the hell's going on. And I pull it up on my phone and I see it. And it's just like surreal. I got punked by the Buccaneers. Apparently, this is a thing that that team websites are doing now.
Oh, really?
I talked to Garrett Follow. He said he got it. He got with it once. This sort of like guerrilla thing. But I was like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, all I cared about was like, did they tape the stuff that like, you know, was not supposed to be on the right? Like how much of the interview is out there now? And luckily they cut it off at the right time. And so it was all in good fun. But that was my combine experience. It was pretty wild.
I thought that was great. Like, I thought you handled it well. I thought he handled it well. Like, he had like a, didn't he say he has it framed in his office or something like that?
He did. Yeah.
Yeah.
He did.
Yeah. So you've made the wall in the Buccaneers.
I made the wall in Jason Light's office. Yeah. The good thing for him is I think, you know, this is a good move for a GM. It shows your humility. The bad move, and someone texted me this, is he can never again say that I don't read anything because he is on the record as reading things.
That's
and
right.
If you make it all the way down to Connor Orr's all 272 predictions, you're reading a little bit, you know?
So
you're reading some stuff, you know?
This, by the way, is why we all hate doing predictions because it's I mean, it's... People don't realize like you can't have a like, and I know some people do, but you can't have like a legitimate prediction of the season where you have like the total record of the league is like 60 games over 500. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And like that's why like I think the exercise, I think you picked it up from Jonathan Jones, right, of picking every game.
Yes.
Is actually kind of like smart because like that's the only way you can really that's the way you can get it to like where it needs to be. Other than like if you, I guess you could just like run off predictions and then be like adjust it, like take a win away from this team or a win away from that team. But like it's disingenuous if you're picking like the total league record to be like 50 or 60 games over 500 because that's obviously impossible. And so there are going to be teams that are going to be really bad unless you have everybody right at 500. And you just picked the wrong one to be bad, I guess.
I told Jason Light, I was like, I had the Patriots winning the AFC East. If he didn't, and I was like, I don't know. I don't know if you caught that, Jason, but also.
And you got dragged for that, too.
And I got, so this was a tough year for the predictions.
So this is like a no-win situation for you because you're getting dragged by the team you underestimated and you're getting dragged by the team that you overestimated.
I know. I sent him a text afterwards, and I was like, "You've got a 10-win minimum from here on out. How can I possibly pick you to win fewer than 10 games from here into the rest of eternity?" So good for him. That if you need to improve your standing on my predictions list, all you have to do is secretly come at me and with a hidden camera, and then we're all good. That was my highlight of the combine, or maybe shrimp cocktail with Albert. But also, let's move into I think what we all care about, which is what the hell the Bears are going to do with this pick. Yep. You have a great, very thorough breakdown of this. I left the combine with an understanding that the Bears were still kind of hoping that someone would maybe blow them away with an offer and make this harder than it needs to be, because I think that hard is good in this scenario. But
yeah,
I mean, you detailed all the work they've done on Caleb, kind of the feedback that they've gotten so far, and I don't know, you leaning towards Caleb at this point for the Bears?
I think it's close to over.
Yeah,
that's my guess. I'm not reporting anything, but I think this thing, I think, you know, obviously Justin Fields is a part of this and everything else, and I mean, to me, the news peg was that they were trying to get him in this week. You know what I mean? Like, and they wanted to get him in this week. And the idea was to have him there, as people are listening to this, on Tuesday, March 5th, which is so early for a 30 visit, you know?
Yeah.
Why would you do it that early? Well, you'd be doing it that early because you're looking to complete the process so you can trade Justin Fields, you know? Right. I think he's checked a lot of the boxes. I think they feel like he's a player who can elevate them. They're in a very unusual situation from a timing standpoint, you know, because on one hand, you'd like to complete the draft, the pre-draft process, right? Like with, you know, your quarterback before making a decision that you're going to take him. But if you do that in this case, well, you know, then what does that mean for Justin Fields? It's probably unfair to him personally, and it also doesn't help the team, because if you're waiting till the middle of April to trade him, a lot of the seats out there for starting quarterbacks are going to be filled up. So that's why they made the effort to get this thing tied up early. I think from here, they're going to dictate, they're going to let how the quarterback market shakes out dictate whether they move Fields tomorrow or 2 weeks from now. But I think that with all the information they've built up, they do feel like they've got the flexibility now to move Fields when the right offer comes along. Now, where that's going to be, we'll see, you know, but there are a lot of moving pieces on the veteran quarterback market, which could accelerate things or slow them down.
Do you think that it's to the point where the Bears are convicted, or do you think it's to the point where no team like breathlessly came to their doorstep and was like, yeah, five first round picks here?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, the Commanders obviously, you know, explored the idea of it. The Raiders, the Giants. So yeah, I think they could probably get a lot for the pick. Yeah, but at some point you got to have your quarterback, right? And at some point Ryan Poles and Matt Eberflus have to put their foot in the ground and say, this is the guy that our regime is building around. And, you know, my understanding is they see him as separate from, you know, the rest of his class at the position, and really like a once in every few years type of prospect. And to have that and to get that and to have him on a rookie contract is something I think is too much to pass on. You know, if you really believe that's the guy. And remember, like, Ryan Poles was part of scouting Patrick Mahomes, 7 years ago in Kansas City. So if anybody knows that if the comparisons are valid, he'd be way up on the list of people who would. So, my sense is that, you know, in the Bears, in the back of their minds, that this thing is just about over, that Caleb Williams will be a Bear, and that Justin Fields will be traded. And they still have parts of the process to go through. They have to go through getting his medicals, which will happen at the 30 visit, probably right after the pro day, which is on March 20th. But just as far as getting to know him and doing the background on him, they're way, way, way down the road on that.
So my takeaway on all this is I think that it's a good thing. You know, we saw a lot of these guys not take the S2 test. We're seeing, yep, a lot of these guys be cautious on the medical. And I think it's smart, and I understand both sides of this. Someone asked Brian Gutekunst about this at the Combine, and I thought his answer was interesting. I want Brian, me speaking as Brian, I want the S2 test, because then I have a baseline of how you interpret things so that when you come into our building and you start playing for us, if anything is above or below the baseline, I can understand how I can help you. That's good. That's great. But we've seen these tests weaponized. We've seen the medical weaponized. And a lot of people, I get it. When somebody has their parent kind of running point on a lot of this, and Caleb Williams' dad is heavily involved, but it's Lamar Jackson's mom was heavily involved. Jaden Daniels' mom is heavily involved. They have one single sole person that they are beholden to, and that's their child. And it ruffles feathers initially, but I do think that it's ultimately a good thing for the kid, because these things tend to, like, no matter what, they're going to get into bad hands. You know what I mean? And so I think it's valuable to silo the information if you're the prospect. And I've kind of done a 180 on this. I do think that the kid's parents, I by and large, is a good thing. Bryce Young's dad. You know what I mean? Bryce Young's dad.
I hadn't thought of it that way, but that's an interesting way to think of it. Like, I know this. Like, obviously, Caleb Williams' dad has taken a lot of heat. But what I, from, you know, my understanding is he's a pretty good businessman. He's smart. And, you know, like, a lot of these ideas seem crazy. The idea that, you know, like, he'd have equity in a team or whatever is really out there. And they probably shouldn't have made it public. But I do think, like, that he does have his kid's best interest in mind. And the one thing that, the one piece of information that is there in that column, right? Like, and everybody, I hope, goes and reads it at SI.com. I think what Cliff told the Bears is interesting. That, like, he never saw his dad, like, Caleb's dad at the practice facility. Saw him once there, I think, in his year at USC, right? So the fact that Cliff told the Bears that, like, that's valuable information.
100%. You know what I mean?
Like, because that tells me, like, okay, his dad is effectively, like, his business manager in some ways, right? But his dad's not showing up at practice. And his dad's not going to call the coach. You know what I mean? Like, that actually happened with Robert Griffin in Washington. You know, like, where the dad called Mike Shanahan on certain. And it's just like, that shouldn't be the parent's role. But the parent can be there to be a manager, to be a sounding board, to help, like, make sure the right people are around him. Like, I remember talking to John Bosa about this, and obviously his kids have become great players, right? And John told me, he's like, I never wanted to be his coach. I never wanted to be their coach. I never wanted to be their agent. I never wanted to be their financial advisor. He's like, the way I saw it was, my role was to find the best people to put around them, to give them the very best, because I have the resources to do it, that'll give them the best chance to succeed. And I thought that was a really smart way of looking at it. You know what I mean? Like, that it's like, I'm not going to be uninvolved. I'm going to be involved, but my job is to make sure that you have the right people around you. And that can be a really valuable thing too, because you and I both know how many snakes there are in this NFL pit, right? Like, so the fact that you would have your dad helping you with that sort of thing, I think is valid, as long as it's in the right space. Like, as long as he's in the right spot. And, you know, he understands what he doesn't know, and he empowers people who do know what he doesn't know to help his kid.
I just keep thinking about this week when everyone was talking about Caleb Williams' dad and what my dad may have told NFL teams if they asked him. They were just like, what do you what do you think of Connor? My dad be like, yeah, he's lazy. He plays a lot of video games. You know, I tell him to get up earlier, you know, but, he just can't really seem to, doesn't really have the grind, you know? And, I think my dad would hurt my draft stock. I don't know.
Yeah. My dad would be like, yeah, we just can't quite get through to him. He doesn't miss any legs. I don't know what his problem is.
It's like, if he spent half as much time working on his algebra as he did playing NCAA, NCAA 2K4 or whatever it was, then we might have something here, you know? But, Caleb's dad, a little bit different. Maybe if I was a generational quarterback talent too, maybe they would have been a little more protective.
I was a generational NCAA player back in the day.
Me too. I'm never going to get credit for this.
So since Emily doesn't, like, listen to this podcast, I can explain how I've... I've already I'm like playing the long game right now and setting up for the release of NCAA 2025. Like last year, I bought Steven a PlayStation 5.
Nice.
And now I've sort of positioned playing video games with them as bonding time. So when the game comes out in the summer, it won't be considered weird that I'm down in the basement, like on that TV.
I feel like with NIL, it's going to get a little creepy and like over complicated. Yeah. But this is where all the best.
I always wanted the bag man in the old NCAA though, and now we're going to get it to some degree, right?
Now we're going to get it. I just want to say something that I came up with so many things that ended up becoming modern, like, and you could argue that like a lot of coaches probably did the same things when they were younger, and then they brought it to the NFL. But like, I remember when I was a kid, right, you'd have your NCAA dynasty mode, and you would put your fastest player at tight end because you to create the speed mismatch. I mean, right. I was running a fake version,
or a quarterback,
yeah, and then you send everybody on all goes because
And then it opens up the space underneath, so you can take off with the quarterback. Yep.
Yes, like I was, you know, and even before they had, like in 2003 or whatever, was the first year where I think they had the zone read because of Utah and Urban Meyer.
Yep.
Before that, you know, you were basically, I was basically running a version of that, and on defense, we're talking about, you know, overriding the computer and just bringing my best defender up to the side of the right alongside the edge rusher, and like my safety would have like 47 sacks a year. I was coming up with all this stuff, man, you know, on my own. So
I also like remember like when you're recruiting and then you get the kid in and you know you put the linebacker in a single digit and give him a visor and a cowboy collar.
Yeah, 100%. I also remember just lying through my teeth to all those kids, right? And then you know, it's like, oh yeah, you can play right away. I don't care. And then they get in there and it's like, no. And I think you lose one or two, but at the time it was what? Who's the Leathernecks? Is that Northern Illinois or Western Illinois? Northern Illinois?
The Leathernecks?
The Leathernecks. Because you had to import them from 1AA.
From 1AA, right? Like, so I remember there was like-
Western Illinois.
Okay. There were only a few 1AA leagues, right?
Yeah, and I imported them into the Big Ten, and then, you know, you kick out, like, I don't know, some subpar school like Ohio State or whatever, and then you just knock them out, and then you just play with Western Illinois the whole time. But
and turn them into, like a national power.
That was what it's all about.
I think I turned UMass into a national power at
one
point.
UMass is solid. That's a good one.
Yeah.
That's going to be fun. We should do an unboxing for that.
Yeah, that'd be cool. That'd be cool. Maybe we can get like EA on board with this too.
I used to do
hopefully our sales team's listening.
Yeah, we used to do I used to have a Madden Dynasty and we would do like weekly updates on the Around the NFL podcast, and we had reached out to Sony, and Sony was like, oh yeah, like if you're serious, like we'll facilitate this. And it ended up kind of like not coming to fruition, but like what a dream that I could finally tell my parents that like all this video game playing has paid off, all the grind.
I will warn you, like when I bought the PlayStation 5, like it is not like it used to be. Okay. Like I was like, oh great. Like I bought him a couple games and everything else. And like, we'll go downstairs and play it. We'll go downstairs and hook it up to the basement TV and play for a few hours. And like now all these games, like you have to like load them into the system. And so, like, when you first turn on Madden, right, you can only play, like, with these, like, two all-time teams. Like, and with NHL, you can only play with the two teams that were in the Stanley Cup Finals the year before. And it takes, like an hour for the game to load into the system. It's the weirdest thing.
What?
Like, it caught me so off guard. Yeah, it caught me so off guard. And it was, like, for a while there, I couldn't figure out that. And then, like, one of the profiles, I set up profiles for my kids because you have to set up these profiles. And, like, I think one of them has, like, parental controls, and I can't figure out how to get the parental controls off so he can't play certain games under his own profile. You know, I feel like I'm, like, Belichick fiddling with the clock in his car. Do you remember that?
Yeah.
Like, that's who I am now. I'm, like, the old man, like, trying to figure that out. So I would just warn you that, like, if you don't have a PlayStation 5 and you're going to get one in preparation for the release of this game, like buy it ahead of time so you can kind of get used to how different all this stuff is. It is not the same as it used to be.
I went from like PS2 and then rode that until the very end. And then like I was buying Maddens that were like, you know, PS3 and PS4 were out, but I was, you know, they still make the Madden for PS2 for as long as possible. And I was like, this isn't worth it anymore. They're not trying. And so I had this desire to go back and actually get the PS2 and remember the Madden, the 1 year that they had QB Vision and it was awful and everybody hated it.
It looked like a cone, right? Like the better the quarterback, the wider the cone.
Like Peyton Manning's was like the whole field, and then you had like right. Dan Orlovsky, and it was like the size of like a butter knife, and he couldn't, but I was like, because I'm looking for something that's like adequately challenging, but also fits into my technological, like I'm PS5, right. I'm done. Like I'm not, you know, and my kids are still too young. I'm not going to be down in the basement grinding and trying to, you know, message on Instagram a 15-year-old to get him to come to my college and then arrange for like a $3,000 payment to get wired to his checking account, which I hope you can do in this game. You probably should.
I do wonder, like, is it like with this game? Because like the new video games, there's so many different controls. Like I'll play NHL against my kid and like, it's really hard with all of like the different things. It's not like freaking Blades of Steel where it's like four buttons and you're like, you know what I mean? Like, well, Blades of Steel was great because like these are the sorts of like, and this is even a little before your time, Connor. Blades of Steel, I think, was like 1988, which is probably like when you were born.
That was the year I was born. Yeah.
Yeah. So Blades of Steel was like, so Nintendo Hockey was the first hockey game I had. Then Blades of Steel came out. Blades of Steel was like, it was like considered like really advanced for the time. So this is the sort of messages we were getting as kids in the 80s. So like if you got into a fight in Blades of Steel, like a hockey fight in Blades of Steel, like the power meters would pop up, right? Like it would, and it basically would turn into Street Fighter.
Oh.
And then if you won the fight, you didn't have to go to the penalty box. So if you won the fight, you got a power play. Which is not how hockey works at all. Like
they're like,
they just
decided
to make that up. Like they just decided to put that in the game. Like in hockey, for those who don't know, in hockey, when two guys get into a fight, they both go to the penalty box. Yet we were getting the message in the 80s that if you won the fight, you didn't go to the penalty box.
I love this. I'm.
Which would be like, there'd be like task forces against people who made a video game like that now.
Okay, Konami made this. Okay, so Konami had. I don't know if you can hear this. I'm playing the.
You playing music? I can't hear it.
Okay, I'm playing the Blades of Steel music, which is solid.
Here, hang on. I'll pull it up on my phone. When you go in, it goes Blades of Steel.
Yes,
and then yeah.
So Konami made Track and Field, which
they also made Contra, right?
Yes.
Track and Field was what you had the power pad for that.
So Track and Field, you had the power pad, and you had. You had to do the sprints, and I remember sitting in my uncle's basement you're sitting there like that, you know?
Yeah. Well, the power pad was on the floor, so you were supposed to run on it.
Yes.
Right. This was on the floor, and there you go. Love it. Love it. That's phenomenal.
Nice.
Like, what great video game music. That's incredible. Is that you or Shelby, Connor?
It must be Shelby. I'm not technologically sound enough to do this.
Or is that Nintendo Hockey? That sounds like Nintendo Hockey. Is that Blades of Steel or Nintendo Hockey?
This is a Konami soundtrack. You can tell. Because this sounds exactly like...
Konami was Contra also. That's Blades of Steel.
Yeah. Well. Oh, man. I remember... Also, like, not gonna lie, played a lot with the Soviet Union in Track and Field. I was not, like, a patriot at that point in my life because... USSR just crushed everybody, and you could play fencing. God, we're so far down a rabbit hole. All right, let's
but just to put a bow on this, the power pad. What kids my age would do is you get the power pad, and you're supposed to run on it, right? So it had the things in the ground. But what everyone wound up doing is you just get in your hands and knees and just go like this. And I know people can't see in the podcast, but get in your hands and knees and just bat your hands against the two spots of the power pad as fast as you could.
Yes. When I saw my uncle do it, so we didn't have the power. My uncle didn't have the power pad, and so for a while I was literally just holding
this is
the
Nintendo
controller.
Hockey, by the way,
oh nice,
that's Nintendo Hockey. So Nintendo hockey was great because when you were putting your team together, you had to pick either the fat guy, the medium guy, or the skinny guy. And the skinny guy was really fast, but the fat guy, there you go. The fat guy could really fight. And the fat guy would like run the skinny guy over if you even made slight contact.
And was the skinny guy like faster?
You had to be strategic in the way you put your team together, huh?
And the skinny guy was like faster, theoretically?
The skinny guy was fast, right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Probably like, you know, they didn't know about today's NFL where like 350-pound people are now running like 4-2 shuttles. All right. Let's really quickly, like two or three hot button things here, and then we're going to get out of there because... Yep.
Because we've jumped down a big time rabbit.
That was here. It was great though. I can talk about Nintendo all day. Yeah. So it looks like we got Jason Kelsey's announcement coming up here in a little bit. If that's it, one of the great centers of all time. I think you first ballot Hall of Famer if possible. A tremendous career, and I think sneakily, you know, the biggest part of this offseason is he's going to be hard to replace. Not, you know, yes, from a player perspective. I mean, he is the tush push.
Yeah.
But also from the fact that, like, you basically had another coach in that organization for, like, 13 years.
Well, the leadership of that team is, you know, it's interesting because they were teetering at the end of last year. And I think, like, it's – so, yeah, he's a great player. I do think they're well set up to replace him from just a – roster standpoint, because they have two guys that have been playing guard in Cam Jurgens and Landon Dickerson who are college centers, right? So, like, theoretically, it should be relatively easy for them to slide one of those guys in and have one of those guys become the long-term answer at center. So I think they'll be okay from a roster standpoint because they prepared for this. Like, from a leadership standpoint, it's just interesting because they had such a rare thing with the four guys that played on the lines of scrimmage, two on offense, two on defense, that have all been there for less than a decade. It is such a rare thing to have the infrastructure that they have with Jason Kelsey and Lane Johnson on offense and Fletcher Cox and Brandon Graham on defense.
Yeah.
Like, to have those four who all have played their entire careers in one place, who have all been there for a lot more than a decade, who play those positions, gave them, I think, an ability to kind of, as they pivoted and changed coaches and changed quarterbacks, like, it was something that was there that they could count on. And those guys were like sort of the keepers of the torch, you know? And so now to be losing one of those guys, and my guess would be he won't be the only one of those four to be gone, really is a big thing for that locker room, for that organization. And people aren't going to talk about that today because we'll be celebrating Jason Kelsey, and rightfully so. But there is that piece of it that I think is going to be really, really hard for the Eagles to replace.
The other thing is Mike Evans signing a contract to stay in Tampa Bay.
Yeah.
Big piece that is off the
So
free
to you,
market.
Is this a tell that the Baker Mayfield thing's going to get done too?
I mean, it has to. You can't, you know.
Right.
And I think it's good. My one question would be, I had reported out this big profile of Dave Canales before he got the head coaching job in Tampa. And one of the interesting things the head coaching job in Carolina, one of the interesting things about Mike Evans was in that offense just this past year, Mike, and it's not like he didn't know all the routes and couldn't run anything, he could, but in that offense, you establish yourself to be able to make any cut. And by cut, I mean you can go in breaking, out breaking, you can stop, or you can go deep, right? And on every single different route concept, you would have had to present to defenders every single one of those cuts.
Yep.
Not every receiver can do that. And through that, Canales was able to call a really effective offense because every time Mike Evans lined up and he was running, you know, and Mike's got no problem getting open, but now he's getting really open, right?
Right.
Because guys
to
are hesitating.
Be able to do that at his freaking size, too.
His size, his age, you know?
Yeah.
And so if you're Liam Cohen now coming in, and Liam is, you know, a big part of the Sean McVay tree, this guy's smart. I mean, he made Will Levis what he was at Kentucky, you know, are you going to, you know, and again, let's bring it back to the beginning of the show. I'm not allowed to doubt the Buccaneers anymore. But, if you bring Baker Mayfield back,
in the department of takes, the Buccaneers have to be handled carefully now.
But you know, I mean, are you going to be able to, you know, what was, here's the way to ask it. Was running it back the right thing for Tampa? I think it was, because the alternative is what, right? So,
well, I mean, like, I think if you, like, if you look at where they're at, though, like, if they're able to kind of continue to, you know, like, obviously Tristan Wirfs is a big building block for them. Chris Godwin's got years left, you know? You know, what do they do with Devin White? Like, there's, you can see, like, that there's a foundation that they should be able to, Vita Vea, you know, like, there's a foundation of players that should be there for a while, that next group. And so, like, I don't know if they have to pull the plug. Here's the other thing. They took on all that dead money last year. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? They're sort of out of the woods.
Yep.
So, yeah, this is spending, but they did hit reset. They did go through it last year. And the same way the Rams did, they were able to weather the storm and come out of it with a winning year. You know, so I do think, you know, like, you can look at what they've done and you can say, you know what, this team's actually going to be in pretty decent shape now. Like, because they were able to not just manage, you know, a reset year, but win through a reset year, which probably I would think would give them the self-assuredness to go and go the extra mile to get Mike Evans signed.
It's a big one. So the Buccaneers are back. That's going to be a sneaky fun division, especially if the Falcons get like Justin Fields, for example, you know,
yep.
A lot of fun to
Kirk
be had
Cousins.
There. Kirk yeah. Cousins. Ooh. But yeah, so we are back. Expect us again. Next week, we're going to be parsing through all this stuff.
Oh, geez, we're going to be in the tampering period, aren't we?
Yeah, and you and I will tamper. You know, why not? It's, yeah. You know, I'm not beholden to anybody. If anybody wants me to tamper, just call me or leave us a rating and review and put your email in there. And
sounds like an old, it sounds like an OnlyFans ad or something like that.
That's right. Yeah. I mean, football writer OnlyFans would be like, yeah, I'll tamper for you. You know, I'll tamper however you want me to tamper, you know?
That is like it's just such a poorly named thing. It's just
the legal tampering period.
Yeah. Like tampering isn't like legal. So like, isn't that an oxymoron? Like tampering was like legit. The term tampering was used to describe rule breaking. So
it'd be like if, and they kind of do have this, but like,
shouldn't it be like the open negotiation period or something like that or whatever, you know,
like the, what you would call like the, I don't know. Yeah. Like the prelude to free agency negotiating period, like the prequel, free agency, the prequel, you know, episode one, free agency, episode one. We could do something like that. I don't know.
I like that. I like that.
Yeah. It'd be like if the stock market was like, this is the time where you can, legally
pre-agency,
pre-agency.
There you go. Pre-agency.
Why not? Right?
I like it. I like it.
Golly, that makes a lot of sense. All right. Thanks, Albert, for everything. Let's check out his column on SI.com about Caleb Williams. It's really good. Matt and Gilberto back with the Thursday show. Thank you guys for sticking with us through the break, giving us a little bit of time to report out. We're going to have a lot of fun stuff coming over the next few weeks, so stick with us.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.